All right, this is Regina Kong with the Hobbit Hole Oral History Project. Today I'm with Peggy McDonald on July 30th, 2019 at her home in Gold Cove. Could we begin just by having you restate your name for me and tell me about where you were born?
Okay, my name's Peggy McDonald and I was born in Reno, Nevada, July 1st, 1957. And I went to school there in high school, and then I went off to college. But I'm the fourth kid of a family that was, there in Reno.
What did your parents do?
My father was an attorney, and my mom, raised us. And my dad was born on Virginia Street in 1920 at home. And then he married my mom just before World War II. He went off, and he was actually stationed in the Aleutian Islands. He flew P-38s. He was in the Army Air Corps.
So did you grow up hearing stories about your dad's time in Alaska?
Not so much, no. He didn't. The only times that I remember when he would talk about it was if a friend from the Army Air Corps or someone that he served with would come through town, and they'd stay up late and talk about it and things like that. But he didn't really share that. He liked airplanes a lot because of that. But he wasn't, at that time anyway, when I was growing up, he didn't really talk about it. When he came up here to visit me, he talked about it, the weather, a lot, because in the Aleutians, during the war, the weather was the worst enemy because there was so much fog, and running out of fuel was a big deal. Mm-hmm. So that was when he would come here, he would just go, yeah, the fog, I remember it, and he would get kind of nostalgic about it then. So that was, I had two brothers and one sister. My oldest brother passed away, so it was boy, girl, boy, girl.
And then what were the things that were interesting to you as a kid?
Well, my dad was a real outdoorsman, so he took us, on adventures, and we would go to Lake Tahoe, and he loved to fish and go out to Pyramid Lake. And we did family trips that were pretty hilarious, the carload of kids and whatnot. And, we lived out of town. We had 5 acres, so we had all different kinds of animals around, and just played a lot outside in the sagebrush, and we had forts and the neighbor kids. We did a lot of things like that. And I went to Catholic school, so the neighbor kids didn't go to Catholic school, so it was really fun to hang out with them another time. And we did a lot of swimming. We had a swimming pool, and we swam a lot, and we would go, to Lake Tahoe and different places like that. And I was, and then, in high school, I chased boys just like everybody else. And in junior high, I still have some friends from back then, that I still stay in touch with. So we had a lot of fun. It was a great place to grow up. We had a lot of freedom. I would call it benign neglect. I mean, we pretty much could just go out the door and we had lots of fun.
And then you were saying that you went to Berkeley for college?
Yes, that was, it was the final landing. When I started out at the Claremont colleges, and I went to Scripps, and that was because I was chasing a boy that went to UCLA, and that did not work out. And I was miserable down there. It was just that was when the smog was really bad in Claremont. And it was a lot of, a lot of the girls had gone to prep schools. And the only girl that I ever became friends with was from Visalia, California. She went to public high school, and she became a good friend of mine. But I was miserable there, and I left, and then I went to Colorado and was a ski bum for a while. And but the great thing about going to Scripps was that I went to Summerstock Theater. I took one theater class, And then my friend talked me into going to the summer stock program in Santa Maria at Allen Hancock College. And we were just techies, you know, we were backstage and did all the kind of things, you know. And it was really fun, and I made a lot of friends there. And that got me into theater. So that was...
Like doing theater or doing more of the tech things
behind it? Well, I ended up being a set designer in the theater. So that was my first real exposure to it. And then one of the guys that I met at Summerstock was going to school at Berkeley, Dennis Sanchez, and I went to visit him. And he took me for a tour at the in the theater at Berkeley, and I was like, oh, I want to go here. So I transferred, and in those days, they let everybody in. That's how I got in. There wasn't any big, you know, they were graded admissions, and they said I needed to get a couple of English credits underneath my belt, and then I could transfer. So I went to Alameda Community College for a couple of quarters, and then I got into Berkeley, and then it was then I studied theater there and took set design and lighting design and costume design classes. And then I just, after that, I went around the Bay Area and started getting little gigs. I'm going to have to cough, excuse me. You'll edit that out. So I started working in the theater in San Francisco and around Berkeley. There were all these little theaters, the Berkeley Stage Company and the One Act Theater Company. And then I worked at the Berkeley Shakespeare Festival at Hinkle Park, when it used to be in Hinkle Park. And I started getting real jobs. I assisted people, but then I started getting my own jobs.
Was this still set designing?
And I did that. And then I moved over to, I had, you know, I lived in Oakland, and then I lived in San Francisco, and that.
What was the Bay Area like in those days?
It was wild. It was really fun. It was the late 70s, and there were still people, you know, protesting on campus, and there were a lot of, you know, old hippies on Telegraph, and they were always handing out flyers, and there was crazy people, you know, ex-LSD people wandering around, and... It was fun, you know, and there's still probably places there that you probably know, like Laval's, and there was Fondue Fred's was a place we used to go to, and there was, anyway, it was great, and I lived on the north side, so there was a movie theater over there, and it was great. And I had a boyfriend that had a long ponytail in the middle of his back and an earring, and I was terrified to bring him home because I knew my father would hate him, which he did, but I stuck it out with him for a few more years, and then that ended. And then I moved over to San Francisco, and I got an apartment with a girl, and then eventually Jane Button became my roommate, and I knew Jane in high school.
Right, were you two friends in high school?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we met in, I think, around ninth grade. And she was great. She's really funny. And so we laughed a lot. I've always enjoyed her humor, and so that we bonded over that. But we just stayed in touch over time, and she went her way to Arizona and Flagstaff. And then she left there, and then she went back to UNR, and you know, we just always saw each other over the holidays or whatever, and so we just stayed friends.
And then you just both ended up in San Francisco living together.
She got a job with the university, so then she came down and moved in with me, and we always laugh because Jane's very type A, you know, everything's really type A, and I'm like type Z, so I was always making her crazy, I think. And anyway, she said at the end that she was getting more sloppy and I was getting more tidy after being around her. So anyway, we had a lot of fun. It was great. Yeah.
So were you planning on doing set designing as a career, or continuing on doing it as a career?
Yeah, I did. I did it in the wintertime. I worked, I got a couple of Bay Area Critic Circle Awards for my set design, and then I was getting tired of San Francisco because it was just getting too much. You know, I was ready for a change, and that was and then this guy blew through town. That was kind of changed a lot of my life.
Tell me more about this guy.
Well, then my sister lived in San Francisco, and she was married to Joe. And Joe and Dennis grew up in Portland, and they went to high school together. And so Dennis stopped in to visit Joe with Bobo on a motorcycle trip. They were going to drive motorcycles to Mexico, and they got as far as San Francisco. And then I don't know what happened. There were all kinds of... Dennis needed his birth certificate, and Bobo was... visiting his friend Bobo. I don't know. Anyway, so they were visiting, and then my sister called me and she said, "Hi, I have a problem." And I said, "What's going on?" She said, "Well, Joe's friend Dennis is here, and he came in on a motorcycle with his friend Bobo, and he's like kind of rattling around in the house, and I kind of, you know, do you have any time? You know, I kind of need, I feel..." He goes, "He just came in the house and he went right into Joe's dresser drawers and put on some dry clothes." And she goes, "He just wrestled in there and found some dry clothes with Joe's." And, you know, they lived together at one point, so he felt comfortable doing that. And so then I said, "Okay." So I said, "Well, I'm not doing anything. I'll come down." And I go, "I'll take him out for a drink or something. You know, we'll wander around." I said, "I actually have to go take some photos of a set design right by your house, because I had done this play in the back of a church for the Lorraine Hansberry Theater. And it was by Antoshaki Shange, and it was a choreo poem. So there were all these dancers, and, you know, I thought, you know, I'll take him in there." I don't know if I was messing with him or not, but I said, I came down and I was like, "Hey, I have to go take these photos of my set and I got to go over there." So he was like, "Okay," you know, and so we just walked, because he's, you know, he's pretty kinesthetic type person. So we walked down to the church, and we went in there, and there were all these black dancers, a lot of male dancers, and they were checking him out, and he was really cute. He was like, "Hi, I'm Dennis Montgomery," and he was shaking all their hands, and they were looking at him thinking he was kind of handsome, and he had no clue at all, you know, he didn't get it at all. So anyway, I didn't say anything, and then we went down and we had a cocktail at a bar, and then I took him back, and then
Did you think he was handsome?
Yeah, but, you know, my radar was really turned off, because I had, the dating scene there wasn't good for me. I was not doing well. So I just kind of given up, you know. I wasn't really paying any attention to him at all. He was handsome, I was like, he's an Alaskan fisherman, and I'm in the theater in San Francisco. You know, it's like, this isn't going to happen. I didn't even think about it. And so then he went to Mexico with Bobo. I think they flew down, and then he came back, and he called. My sister said, "Can you come over for dinner?" And I said, "No, I have too much work to do. I can't." So about 2 hours later, he showed up at my house with leftovers. He had walked all the way to my house. And I was like, "Okay, something's going on here." So anyway, that's how it all started. And then he felt my leg. And then that was another time we went out. And he ran his hand down my leg. And I was like, "Okay, this is real then. It's not just my imagination." Okay. So anyway, then he said, "I'm interested." And I was like, I'm sorry, I wasn't really paying attention. And so then we got together, and then he said, I have to, you know, we went out and whatnot, and then he said, I have to go home, but I'll call you at 8 o'clock tonight, because he had his motorcycle, and he drove, and I said, yeah, right, you know. And then at 8 o'clock, my phone rang, and I was like, well, I'll be, you know. Who? No one did that then, you know. I was shocked. So then I thought, well, he's honest. And so anyway, that's how it all started.
So when did you leave San Francisco, and what made you leave?
Well, so that, I guess we saw each other, because that was in February of 84. So, and then we kind of communicated, and I think I went home to visit my folks, and I said, I don't know. And then he had invited me up to Long Beach, Washington to visit, and he was there, and so I drove up there, and then I was going to go visit him in Port Townsend, and then that spring he said, I want you to come to Alaska, I want you to come up. And I was like, oh boy, you know. And I said, okay. So excuse me. So I did Summer Stock Theater, and then in August, I came up here, and I had worked in a design studio in the office, and I had to, that was the only phone, and so I gave him that phone number. So every once in a while, the phone would ring, you know, not very often, and he would call on the radio through the VHF, where you would call Cape Spencer Radio. And you could talk, and he had a really bad radio, so it was like, and then, of course, everyone teased me about it. And so anyway, I went up there, and I hope I'm not mixing everything up in my dates, but I'm pretty sure that's right. And then I went up, and I flew up here, and I flew into Juneau. And this woman named Paula Terrell picked me up at the airport, and her husband or boyfriend was out fishing, and so she knew the drill, you know. She got me to the airport. I think we had to run around and, you know, prior to that, get all the requests that everyone had sent, you know, that they needed. And so I got in the plane and I flew into Elfin Cove, and I was just like, what the hell am I doing, you know? And I landed, and he was there tied up, and he had a boat called the Salmon Bay, and it was a 1929 tugboat, and it was painted in bright yellow, the wheelhouse. And he said, did you bring boots? And I said, yes. My father took me to the store in Reno, and I got these boots, and I pulled them out, and they were hip waders. And he said, I had them on, and he said, don't get off the boat in those. He goes, take those off. You're going to embarrass me. So then he walked me up to the store, and we found some boots there, and he bought these black boots. You know, they weren't extra tufts, but they were. So then he said, now we're going to go fishing. And I was like, what? And so we left the dock, and we headed out to Jacobi Island, and we fished. And then the closure happened a couple days later. And then we went to the Hobbit Hole. And I had no idea what to expect, you know. So we came in the gut, and, you know, you get off the dock, and there's all these little boats tied up, and Bobo and Deborah were there, and Ron Creer was there, and Kim Nay was there, and Tyga was there. He was three. And so, you know, we did the introductions, and then everybody, you know, everybody kind of had little projects going on. Someone was, like, Deborah was always working in the strawberry garden, and somebody was doing stuff on their boat, and I met Greg. And, you know, I kind of got everybody kind of checked me out. And then the person that was really nice to me was Tyga. And he was like, do you want to see my fort? I'm going to show you my secret hiding place. And so he was taking me all around in the woods and showing me around. And then we went and picked blueberries, and he was just really sweet. He was really funny. And I do remember a venison roast that Ron cooked that was really delicious. And then I was only there for 2 weeks. So there was a party or something, and everybody was drinking beer and whatnot. And I was looking out the window of the house, and everybody was playing volleyball and all that. And I started crying. And Fred was there, and you know, he's goes, are you okay? You know, and I said, yes. He said, what's wrong? And I go, I just think I'm going to have to come here every year for the rest of my life. And I started crying. He goes, it's okay, you know, because I got hit really hard. So I was very concerned because it was not in the plan at all in my life. So anyway, and Fred was my comfort. He was like, okay. Anyway, so then after that, and then Dennis said, I want to talk about a relationship. And he goes, I know, you know, he just ran off and didn't want to talk about it. But anyway, that was sort of how it all, I got hit hard.
What about the Hobbit Hole hit you hard?
Well, it was just, you know, it was communal, and that, you know, Dennis was, you know, he was just in his element, and he was very vivacious, and it was beautiful, and I grew up in a family, you know, we were outdoors a lot, and the outdoors was really important, and fishing was very, we used to go fishing all the time with my dad, and, you know, we were, and it was just quite stunning, you know, so I was just overwhelmed, and it was just different. And I think that in the theater, you're in a communal environment. Everybody has a job and everybody does anything. So that was familiar to me. So I felt some comfort there. But I didn't know all the rules yet. I was still like, I didn't know what I was, you know, what. The one thing, I think I offered to cook something. And I was making, I think, like a cabbage dish. They were like, well, you know, I said, well, I can cook something. And they said, oh, well, you know, look in the pantry and see what we have. And there, I think there was a cabbage in there. And I got the Betty Crocker cookbook out and looked up a cabbage recipe. And so I was trying to fit in. So I pulled an onion out and a couple onions out. And one of them was just all moldy and gross. And I threw it in the compost bucket. And Greg saw me do it. And he walked over and he said, he reached in and he pulled the onion out and he said, you'd never make it here in a winter. And he just chopped it and he peeled all the rotten stuff off and threw it in the compost and threw it at me. And I was like, okay. So, you know, just stuff like that, you know. And anyway, it was funny. And the next summer I came up and I came up on the boat with him. I came up on the Salmon Bay from Port Townsend. And we got into some weather, and it was just crazy. And the boat was overloaded with stuff because used to be they would call Dennis and they're, I need leads. Can you go to Seattle Marine and get this? I, you know, need cable. I need, you know, can you get us some, we need groceries. And he would just load that boat up and take it up. And it was just loaded. So it's a little dicey going up, and you know, I didn't know anything because he was just like, oh my god, you know, and I was like, what's the matter? There's water over here. And he was just like, oh shit, you know. And so so we got up there and everybody, you know, and then everybody comes and unloads the boat and helps get everything out of it. And so, and that was when they were fishing humpies seriously over at North Island. And so what we would go out, he would go out with that little boat and go out to Yacobi Rock and fish for king salmon. So this one time I was out there and we would anchor up in the anchorage, and it was just a huge westerly, and it was just these giant swells. They were just you disappeared. You couldn't see the horizon. You were just looking at waves on green water on either side, and he was just motor, and they call it getting in the trough, where it's just this swell, and I was just, oh God, I couldn't do it. And I came in and I said, I can't do this. I'm dying, And he goes, okay. Well, there used to be a boat called the Marmot that was a packer, and Sandy and Buddy would run it. And they would come, the buyers were out there, and they had these little float, little scows, and they would pack all the fish on it. And then they would come, the packer would come from Excursion Inlet, and with Excursion Inlet packing, and they would load the green totes on, and the people that worked on the scow would do your laundry, they'd give you beer, they had cookies, and they were like trying to lure you from the other buyers. So we came in and the Marmot was in, and so Dennis went up. And he knew, and he talked to Buddy, and he said, "Can you get her into Elfin Cove? Are you guys going back?" And they go, "Yeah, we'll give her a ride." So I got on the boat, and I was just like, "Oh my God!" And then Dennis called over at the Hobbit Hole and asked for someone to pick me up in Elfin Cove. And so we were riding in, and I was with George Mills, was the one of the hands on the boat, and George was a native from Hoonah. And Buddy and Sandy, I don't know if they were from Hoonah or Sitka. I kind of think Buddy was from Sitka. Anyway, and he was native too. And so George was back there, and he was a lot like Fred. He's a man of very few words. And he was like, how are you? I go, oh, I'm okay. And I was on the table, there was something. I said, what's that? He goes, gumboots. And I said, oh, what are those? He goes, try one. They're in sea oil. So I ate a gumboot, and it was like, oh, thank you, But he was like, he was real sweet and nice. And so then I got into Elfin Cove, and Ron picked me up. He took me back to the Hobbit Hole, and that was when Doris and Bob were visiting. And I came in, and I was just, oh, God, And Doris was sitting on the floor with her legs spread eagle, and she had one of those old, they had this old braided rug, and she was sitting there, and she was repairing it, and she was sewing and working on it, and I came in, and Doris had a very high voice. Oh, hello, how are you? And she was really, I'm okay, and I think that might have been the first time that I met her, and so I introduced myself, and she goes, now, oh, you're with Dennis, right? And I said, yes. And I said, yes, I was getting seasick out there. I really wasn't having fun. And she said, oh, yeah, Dennis. Yeah, Greg, what was that girl's name that fished with him that one time, and you never saw her? She was just handing sandwiches to him because he had a little boat. He goes, Dennis, yeah, he's... And then Greg said, your boyfriend's a fishing machine. And he just went upstairs. So, anyway, they all were very sympathetic with me, and I got to hang out on the beach. I think I slept on the couch or something, but then he finally came in and a day or so.
So this was your second summer?
Yes, it was, yes. Oh, yeah.
Your second summer at the Hobbit Hole.
Right, that was my second summer. And then I don't think I was there very long. I think I had to go back and go to work. I was a shorter summer. And then I think I might have stayed like a month and a half or something like that.
And you still kept in touch with Dennis while you were...
Yeah, he used to write me letters, and he'd call me. He's not very good on the phone. So you'd kind of go like, are you, you know, oh, yeah, okay, bye. And it was hard to call then because you had to go through the marine operator. And everyone could listen on one. You would turn it, oh, I think it was channel 26, and people could hear your conversations. Oh. So you could listen. So there was, if you were bored out fishing, you would just turn the radio. And you could only hear one side of it, you know. So if you're out there, you just sit there and listen to these conversations. It was really hilarious. And I think that summer also we fished for humpies. And that was just really hard work. I mean, lots of, you know, they'd get up at 3 and go out and fish till noon or 1, you know, till 3, I think, or so. And it was really hard work. And it's just, you're just pulling them in one after another.
And were you helping?
Yeah, I was a deckhand. That was funny. And it was hard work. And so I remember Kim and I, one time we got back in, and your arm just gets so sore. We were laying on the deck, and it would have been like kind of a rainy, and then the sun came out, and we were just laying there right on the front porch there, and the sun was out, and we were laying there, and then all of a sudden a cloud moved in and started raining, and we didn't get up. And we just laid there, and Craig just walked by with a blanket and threw it on us, and we just laid there, and we were tired. So that was funny. Yeah, it was a quite, you know, it was totally different from anything I'd ever done. And there was great, you know, you're fishing and the whales come by and eyeball you, and there's, you know, all kinds of stuff going on out there. And you know, it just a lot of, you know, funny stuff that happened. But it was very hard work. And that was when they were cleaning them too. So he would clean them all, and I would try and clean them, but I mostly ran. And he had his hydraulics were weird on one side. When he would run his side, he would run it, you know, he'd run it really fast. And, you know, when I was doing it by myself, I did it at my pace. But when he was running it, then mine would go really fast. And I thought, he's trying to make me fish faster. And I was so mad at him. And then finally I said, why are you doing that? And he said, doing what? And I said, you're making me, I can't go this fast. And he goes, what are you talking about? We realized that was the problem. Mm-hmm. he there was times where it was not fun, you know, a lot. And one time I cried and told him I hated him. And then one time we got in we were out in front of Three Hill, where we were trying. It was just really a bad day. It was stormy and windy, and I had gotten a big snarl in my line. It was just a big mess, and he was all trying, you know, our gear's flying everywhere, and so he took his gloves off, and he got the gaff hook, and he was trying to fix it, and the wind blew his gloves right into the water, and he was just like, rah! And I was like, that was when I went down and hid, and I told him I hated him, but we got through that. But you know, it was just, you know, it was really hard work. And so anyway,
how would you describe Dennis as a person?
Dennis is honest to a fault. Almost, he's a very honest person. He's a very hard working. He's a very physical person. His comfort is when he's doing things, you know, he's always got something going on. He is a very passionate person, although you wouldn't, in the sense that he has a big heart. He's very sensitive, and you know, he's just a, you know, he's a really good person, and he's really loyal. Mm-hmm. So that was really.
When did you decide that you would live in Alaska permanently?
Well, that was after we got married. But we aren't here year round ever. We've mm-hmm. never been here year round. Well, and then he was saying, you know, well, I want. He had this property in Port Townsend, and he just bought, and he was, you know, starting to do stuff on the house. And he says, we're going to have kids here and we're in this and that. And I was like, well, oh, are we, you know? And I was kind of going, well, you know, I uproot myself, you know, so I asked him, I said, if I asked you to marry me, would you marry me? And we were digging on, out on his property, and he goes, well, yeah. And I go, will you marry me? And he goes, well, yeah. And I said, okay, then I'm in. But otherwise, no, I'm not. I'm not doing all this to, you know, this isn't just for sport, for me, you know. So then that was funny. So we were engaged, and I don't know. I mean,
how long have you two been together?
About two. So we met in 84. So that would have been like in 86 sometime, like probably in the winter, like maybe January or somewhere around then. And so then we decided we'd get married. I don't know. It might have been in the fall of 85 or something like that. So we'd been together for about a year and a half or more. And I, you know, cause so, I went back up to Alaska. I went back up that summer, and then we were talking about getting married. Well, and then in my family, you can't get married. Couldn't get married in the fall because there was duck hunting and chucker hunting and quail hunting. So my dad was like, fall's out. I'm sorry, I can't, you know. So we ended up getting married in November. And you can't get married in the summer because everyone's fishing, mm-hmm. you know. So there was just... So we ended up getting married in November 15th. So that was...
And where did you...
In Port Towns, and we mm-hmm. just did it there, and everybody... So that was good for the Alaska people to come down, and then my folks and everybody came up there.
So Dennis had a house in Port Towns.
He had purchased property, and he had a little shed, boy shed. And the first time I stayed there, he had his dog Snubber, and I got in bed with him, and... I said, your dog is staring at me. And he said, well, you're in her spot. So that was, you know, so there you go. So then, you know, I was living in Seattle. I had gotten an internship at the Seattle Repertory Theater, and I'd started doing some design work in Seattle because I said, I'm not moving out in that shed with you. I'm going to kind of keep myself, have a spot for myself until I was really sure, you know. I didn't want to go... I'd already done that enough to, you know, I moved in with some guy and all that stuff. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that again. That didn't work out. So I was much more cautious, as he was as well. So we were just taking it, kind of still checking each other out.
So then when did you decide to move to Alaska?
Well, then it was, then we were at the Hobbit Hole, and then we got married in 86 in November, and then I was at the Hobbit Hole with him then, fishing, and I think I stayed that whole summer. I think I stayed like at least 2.5 months, I think. And then I started, you know, he wanted kids right away, so on the 4th of July... of 87, he came in, and we started, thought, well, we, you know, we were kind of, I think we kind of tried, well, maybe before that, but there was a 4th of July in the guest house, which was in the studio. Mm-hmm. We tried again, and then after that, I was just sick. I felt terrible, and I had this bronchitis cough, and every time I said, when you cough, do you throw up? Because everyone kind of got the no, and I go, God, I just feel terrible. I need to go home. And there were some people coming up that we knew that were going to come visit, and I said, I can't, I'm sick, I got to go home. Well, I was pregnant. So then I, you know, I had to tell him, call him, and say, it definitely worked.
Was this Alex?
No, this was Annie, who's our oldest daughter. So that was, so then I went down to Port Townsend, and then we had rented a house. Where were we living then? Oh, he was building the house. And the year before, we had stayed in this house in this neighborhood where there were a bunch of fishermen. Actually, the house that Fred lives in now was the house that we rented. And then Fred house sat for us in he bought that house. And then he was building this house he had this little shed, boy shed, and then he started building this other shed house up on the hill. And so it wasn't finished. And we lived in a trailer up there on the property. We bought a little trailer and parked it there. And so he was working on the house, and we had this little trailer. And so then we had an outhouse. I don't even know if we had a toilet. So he was working on that all winter, and I was pregnant. And so that would have been 87. So we'd only been married a year, and barely a year, and I was pregnant. And then he bought this new boat, this big boat, the LE4, and he went fishing. We bought it. Dad, it had a California troll permit, and so in the spring he took off and did that, and I had a 6-week-old baby, and he left me with that.
And where were you living then?
And then we moved into the house that was not finished. I moved into the house
in Port Townsend.
Yes, and there was no. It was, and then I went that. I came back up that summer, but I did not live at the Hobbit Hole. I rented a little house in Elfin Cove.
So, why did you rent a house there instead of living at the Hobbit Hole?
Because there was no place for me to stay, really. There wasn't any housing, and he was fishing. And I didn't want to raise my kids in a commune. I just, I think having a baby is a really private little thing. And when you have an infant, they cry and they keep everybody awake and all that. And, it was really personal. For me, there wasn't really any choice, I felt. I didn't have. So we found this house and rented it. And I came up, and Annie was 3 months old when I came up, and we were in Elfin Cove. And that was really fun. And I met a bunch of other women. And, my friend Rosemary Enderly had Holly. And so we were palling around. And then this other gal moved next door to me, and she had an infant too. And so we were... So it's bad, it's fun, considering everything else. But anyway, so that was what. So for the next two, that summer and the following summer, I lived in Elfin Cove.
And what did you do for the rest of the year?
And we went back to the unfinished house. And then.
And were you still working?
No, not then I wasn't. But later, when Annie got older, I started working at the Empty Space Theater in Seattle. I got a couple of jobs when, she was weaned and all that stuff, and I could leave her with Dennis, and he would take care of her. And then I would do some set design work. And I commuted to Seattle from where we lived. And so that was what we did. And then we went back to the Hobbit Hole. We bought a float house from Shirley Piedra and Chuck Piedra. And it was her, when she worked at the fuel dock, she had this little float house, and she had her kids there. So we moved back over there, and Dennis drug the float house over there, and we had it on the beach at the Hobbit Hole. And then Dennis's sister came and fished with him. Well, so when we were in Elfin Cove that first summer, Dennis's sister Barbara came out and fished with them. And I just stayed on the beach. I stayed in Elfin Cove with Annie. And then the next year, I think she came out again. And that year, she brought her kids out. Annie must have been about 3 or 4. Anyway, she came and fished with him for a few years. And that's where she met Ron. So that was Dennis's sister. She came out, and so her girls came out for a few weeks, and we had the float house on the beach over there, and it was just kooky as hell. It was, it was pretty rough. The float house was, it was pretty funky, and I don't know where the girls stayed. I can't remember. But anyway, they were there for just a couple of weeks, and so then, the following year, one of those years, the float house was over at the Enderley's Beach. And we that was a terrible thing because there was so much surge on that beach that the float house was just always getting banged around mm-hmm. when the tide came in and everything. I think we went there first, and then we went back over to the Hobbit Hole. So I stayed in that house for 2 years. Then I went to the Enderley's Beach for a summer. And then the following summer, we took it over to the Hobbit Hole again and lived there. And, you know, he was... And then... for a couple of years, we were there for 2 years. And then Jennifer Thompson was a gardener. And I was there with Annie, and Jennifer and I were both pregnant, and she was pregnant with Eric, and I was pregnant with the twins. So there is a picture of Jennifer and I with our bellies, showing our bellies. And that was, anyway, so that was what, he's going to come in.
Can you pause it?
Okay, so Jennifer and I were pregnant there, and she was further along than I was, and that was Jane. So Jane had come to visit me the summer before at the Hobbit Hole, and then she met Greg, and then that was her summer there, and she and Jennifer were... you know, doing the garden and all that stuff and everything. And I think Annie and I kind of came and went a bit with... and then... so that September, when I was going home, and Jane was... I think Jane came into town.
Going home to...
Going back to Port Townsend, Washington, and Jennifer was... We were visiting, we were staying at her house, and she'd already had Katie, and then we were there visiting, and Jennifer was like, I don't feel very good, and she went into labor, and Jane and I were there, and she had a home birth, and Steve was stuck in Hoonah. He had just been waiting for Eric to come, and he wasn't coming out, and he wasn't coming out, and so Steve went back out to go fishing, and the minute that he... you know, left, that she went into labor. And so we were waiting, and the midwife was there, and Steve was trying to get back, but the fog set in, and he was waiting at the airport, and they wouldn't fly. And then finally the fog lifted, and I ran to the airport to pick him up. And while I was gone, Eric shot out, and Steve walked in, you know, we walked in the door, and here was this little baby. So we missed the big action, but... Anyway, that was that. And then the next summer, I had the twins in January, and I came up for just a couple of weeks because it was just nuts. I mean, I couldn't,
So you had three kids.
Yeah.
Three young kids.
Yes, and my husband was fishing, and I was there at the Hobbit Hole, and it was way too much. The twins were, you know, like 8 months old, and it was just way too much. And I ended up crying and going home. And then... Because then after that... Let's
see. Do you feel like having kids changed things at the Hobbit Hole?
Oh, for sure. There's no question.
How?
Well, it was a communal thing, so any kind of activity like disciplining, or if your kids are screaming, or they're being little brats, you know, everyone felt like they could intervene their opinion about child rearing. not in a negative way, but it was just like, I just felt uncomfortable having, you know, I wanted more privacy. So the next summer we tucked that float house and we towed it to the back harbor by where Bobo and Deborah live. And there's a shed over next to Hap's place, and that was our float house. And then we stayed there for a couple of summers. But it's just really hard because, it got out of hand there at the end because there were so many people there. And all the original Hobbits, originally they all had little boats, and it was just them. And, you know, it'd be a communal dinner or,
But then everybody got bigger boats and they had deck hands. And it just like some nights there was 30 people in that house, and it was a lot. And it got, and then, people, some people paid or donated, gave money, or some people didn't. And, I remember we did the big shopping thing, and I tried to, all the food was in the shed there, the woodshed, and you're trying to, make people give money. And so I started like a grocery store in there, and I had all and everyone told me to shove it. No one wanted to do the grocery store scene. So I think everybody just ended up contributing, some money for all the produce and groceries and everything like that. But it got way out of hand, and it was just too much, and the food was always good. People was always a potluck. People would bring up food, and they all had paper plates, and but it was just, there was a lot of people there, and it just kind of, everybody kind of wore out their welcome, and it wasn't, but everybody contributed, if there was like a big project or something, like when they expanded the house, everybody was there doing a project, or the water line, the hydros, Dennis was very involved with that. So everyone did, helped quite a bit to get that place up. But at the same time, it was just a lot of people. And but before that, they'd sit around and talk about the day of fishing. I mean, when it was smaller, and also then, I mean, it was okay. I mean, it was fun still, but they would sit around and talk about their fishing year. Like, oh, what hoochie did you use? And, oh, I got these black ones. They're really good for coho. Oh, the pink. It's time to put on the pink when the coho fishing would slow down. Oh, we got to put on the pink, and they'd make these little hoochies themselves with these little pink things, and they'd all sit there and make their, and then they talk, what's your leader size? And you sit there, and I remember Kim Nay and I, we were just like, oh God, here we go again. It's like, but they just sit there and talk about, yeah, well, on and on and on about the fishing gear and what color and what your, everything. So it was funny. But it was a lot, and that was kind of like, and then you have a bunch of kids running around, and I loved going over there, to visit and everything after the kids got older and things like that. But it's just a lot, and then people won't go to bed early, and even if you were on the tied up to the dock out there, and you'd have a, it just, I was struggling enough as a parent. I didn't need another layer of it, I just, it wasn't, I felt like it wasn't appropriate for me to be there. We had our little float house, but when, it was just too much. And then like doing laundry and all of that, it was just a lot. So in Elfin Cove, they had the wash, the laundromat. I'd load my boat up and haul all the kids out to the front of the bay, and and they had friends. Then there was like other little kids running around too. So, and that was, I think that was good for us too. So we decided to do that.
Do you think the other parents at the Hobbit Hole felt the same way? Is that just be Deborah and Babo and
And Jennifer, no, their parenting style was very different than mine, which is fine, and they felt comfortable, and she was fishing, and she'd take her kids out fishing with her and everything. But they had a different style of parenting, and I have respect for that, that I was more private in my child rearing. And I had twins is a lot. I mean, it's just nuts. I mean, you're just nuts. It's nuts. And Annie's running around. She was kind of like Tyga, she was just zipping around all the time, and a lot. So she had Holly in Elfin Cove, which was her buddy, and they would, we, Rosie Enderley and I, see, we weren't fishing. We were the women, the wives that did not fish. So then, so she had Holly, and she had that house over there, and I had my house, and so we just hang out on the beach with the kids and do, tide pooling and things like that, and We had a lot of fun, but it was still hard, you know. We always had like some poor running boat that had some sort of jerry-rigged outboard that only the husbands knew how to fit. And then we'd finally go, let's get the hell out of here. And so we'd get in the boat. One time we took, when I was in Elfin Cove, and we took the Hobbit Hole. We went to the Hobbit Hole when Annie and Holly were two. They were little. And I was living in Elfin Cove. And I had missed everyone, you know. I kind of wanted to see everyone. And I said, let's go over to the Hobbit Hole. And so I had this Boston Whaler that Dennis left with, I think, a Suzuki outboard on it. And so we were really careful. We checked the tides, and I got the boat running, and everything was good. And we left from Elfin Cove, and we went over to the Hobbit Hole through the, you know, South Pass, which was really a big deal. And we got over there, and oh my God, we had so much fun. I think Lynn was the cook then. And so we were, you know, visiting with her, and she was very hilarious and crazy and funny. And she used to be a stripper in Seattle. So she always had all these stories about, you know, and she was this big, beautiful woman. She was funny. You know, we're visiting, and she's sewing, and we're all visiting and having fun and picking berries. And then Deborah comes in, because we were like, okay, we got to go. And she... I think she was on the radio. She goes, oh boy, it's really picking up out here. It's really a big westerly. And so we had figured out what the tide was and everything. And she came in, and then I think Bobble came in, and they go, it's blowing out there. And we were like, uh-oh, we're in this little boat, you know. And we didn't know what the hell we were doing. So I don't know if someone else came in and said, I think Greg even said, you're going to just have to spend the night. And we were like, no, we can't. We got to go home. He goes, well, I don't know. So Ron said, well, they decided, okay, Ron, you get in your skiff and you lead them back over through the pass and get them over there. Well, I had already been taught by Dennis to go behind the rock. But Ron, you know, he just went straight. We didn't go behind the rock, and it was just a huge waves. And Rosie was in the front with the girls, and I was driving the boat, you know, and I was just like, oh my God. And we had just very little freeboard, and we're driving. And so Rosie, in her Texas accent, she's like, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, merrily. And the girls were like, merrily, merrily. And I was just like, oh my God. And Ron's like, he's got a different boat with a, you know, and I got this Boston Whaler, and it's just boom, boom, you know, and we're going right behind him, and he's breaking it a bit. And then finally we get over, and then he peels out and drops us. And then we get it over to her house, you know, and we made it. And I was just like, and we were, you know, and then you have to haul the skiff over on this line, and then you have to hike all the way to her house through the woods. And there we're all sopping wet, and the kids are tired, and we get to her house, and I just said, you don't have any liquor here, do you? And she goes, well, now I just might have something underneath the sink. And she pulled out some old nasty bottle of bourbon or something, and we both had a shot. And it was like, oh, shit, that was scary. But, you know, fortunately, the engine didn't die, which has happened. I've done that before, but I mean, I learned everything. But anyway, that was kind of crazy stuff that we did, because you're just like, I can't sit here anymore. I need to go to the mall or something.
Yeah. What were some of your things that you did
for fun with the kids? Yeah. Well, we over at the Hobbit Hole, that was always another place that we would go. We would Magic Beach, we'd camp over there. And so we went over there with the kids, and there was like Teresa Fisher, myself, Rosie, and I think there was another mom there. And And there's a picture somewhere of, like, Rosie always had to have her frying pan because she's from Texas. I need my bacon and my coffee in the morning. So we the picture of it was, like, for one night. And there was just crap from one end to the other on that beach. Someone took a photo of it. But it was really fun because you could catch Dolly Varden's over there. And I think that, you know, it was fun, you know, and the kids could run around and just to get out of the... Elfin Cove got a lot of fog. It gets foggy. So when it's sunny here, it's foggy there sometimes. So you sit over there in the fog, and it's just kind of nerve-wracking. But we had lots of fun. And then, yeah, we'd go over and visit. You know, I went over and visited quite a bit. And go over. They didn't, you know, invite us to dinner, and we'd come over in our boat. And that was fun. And then in 1996 is when we started here. We caught here. But up until that time, we'd been kind of gypsies in the summer, you know, moving that dumb float house everywhere, here and there and back again. But, and we'll go out fishing with him sometimes on the boat. But I did go halibut fishing another time at the very first, when I was first with him. And this is another story about... So Greg and Dennis always fished halibut, and they would use Dennis's boat. And so Kim, he was with Kim. And so Kim and Greg and Dennis and I fished the halibut. And so that was my second summer. And I still, you know, I was like baiting up. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was cutting fish and doing all that. And so we went out, and they said, okay, you be the, when we're setting the gear, you're going to be the driver. And you have to write down these numbers, because they had this, it was the Lowrance or whatever. You had to write down the coordinates of where they dropped the gear on the halibut set. So I was driving, and then they would, you know, they go, okay, you know, and then I'd have to write the number down where it went. And then when they would pick the gear up, Dennis would drive and drive, and then he'd go, okay, we're getting the gear. And then they're pulling the gear, and things are all going, and he goes, turn to the port. And I'm like, see, port, left, wine, red, what, and, you know, and I couldn't remember. So I made these little signs that said port and starboard in the wheelhouse. And he didn't, we fished, and, you know, we did it, you know. And then when finally he was in the wheelhouse and he saw those, and again, take those signs down. I don't want anyone to know how stupid you are. He didn't say stupid. He never said that. But, you know, I don't want anyone to know, you know. And then, one time we were going halibut fishing, and this was before I had Annie and before Dennis and I were married, and it might have been around that same time, you know, maybe the following year. And it was, they used to do like 24 or 36 hour halibut openings, and everybody's tied at the dock at the hobbit hole, and they're all gearing up, and they're, you know, baiting their lines and everything, tying gear and all that stuff and going on. And then, you know, you're getting close to time when you can go. It was like a noon gun went off or whatever, not a, you know, but that was when the time would go. And Baba was having trouble with his boat. He had the gun vore, and it wouldn't start. And everybody's down there trying to figure out what the heck's wrong with it, you know. And they finally, he's freaking out, you know, because the tide's going out. You got to get out of the gut. You know, and so Dennis decides that they go, we can get it started, but we just need a little bit more time. He goes, okay, Bob, I'm going to tow your boat out, and then we can get it out of there. And then once you get it started, then you can go. But we got to get you out of here, because you're going to get stuck, and 6 hours later, you're going to miss, you know, half the fish, you know, quite a bit of the fishery. And so Dennis ties up the gun for, and I'm on the back deck. Why I am. And so he is going out. And so you're going, you know, you go out you have to kind of curve around and watch the rocks. And so he's going out, and Bob was right behind him. And then Dennis pulls that way you know, they're going this way, and then Dennis goes that way where the boat just keeps going straight and just runs right into the beach. And it's just buried in the sand. And oh my God, everybody's freaking out, and they untie it, and then Dennis gets his boat out, and the gun bore's there, and then everybody jumps out, and they have to prop it up so that it won't tip over. And they've got all these 2x4s and shit, everything there. And then they take all of Bobble's gear and they throw it onto the prospector, which is another guy's boat, Patrick. And Dennis, they anchor up. I think they all went on the prospector and they all helped Bobble put his gear out. And Tyga and I were on the Salmon Bay and they anchored up. And then they all jumped on the other boat and they forgot about Tyga and I. And they went out fishing, and we were anchored up right in front of the hobbit hole, and Tyga and I were on the boat for like 4 hours with each other. He was like four, you know, and he was hilarious. You know, I think Deborah has a video of him, but we made up stories and played, but we were just there. And then someone was like, oh my God, we forgot them. They came back, are you guys okay? And we're like, yeah, we've been stuck here for a while. And then they got Bobo's boat off and everything was fine. But I think they got his boat started. But
wow.
Anyway, that was one of the many adventures.
So you were spending basically the summers up here, then the rest of the year down in Port Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
What was it ever sort of strange? I don't know. Is Port Townsend a urban suburban?
It's Port Townsend has about 10,000 people, 10 to 14,000 people, and there's a big marine harbor, and there were a lot of people that fished in Alaska, mm-hmm. that had their boats in Port Townsend. So in the springtime, that was the boat harbor was thriving with all kinds of fishermen and Dennis's friends, and they'd all work on their boats, and they had quite a community there.
Is that where the girls went to school?
They went. We lived in Port Townsend until 2005, and they went to school there. And you know, they went to school with other kids whose dads fished too. You know, so it was a part of the community. And they're the woman that helped me a lot when the twins were little was Donna Hall, and she was married to Matt. And they were the ones that lived across the street from us when we first were in the house, in Fred's house. And she was Mary Poppins to me. She really helped me a lot. But her husband was a fisherman. And yeah, so it was a good... But then we moved because my parents were in their 80s and we needed to help them. And I just said, I've been going to Alaska for 20 years. It's your turn. You got to come down to Nevada now. He was like, okay. No, so he did.
And you lived in Reno?
We lived in Reno until 2011. And then
Dennis was still fishing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we were doing this business then.
Oh.
We started that in 96. And so then from that point on, we've been over here. And, and in 2012, we moved to Truckee, California, which is just in the Sierras, because he did not like Nevada that much. He didn't like Reno. There weren't any trees, and it was just like, you know. I said, okay, well, I'm not moving back to Washington, so I reconnected with a bunch of my old friends, and so we did like a 30-mile radius, and I said, okay. And so we started looking, and then this house came on the market, and it was reasonably priced because of the economy was still bad. And so we got a deal on a house and sold the house in Reno and moved to Truckee.
And then so you were doing this business during summers?
Still, yes, since 1996. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it. The girls were three when we started. The twins were three.
And so explain a little more what the business is here.
It is an outfitter business, which is different than a charter business, is that it's self-guided. So all the people can come and they can take themselves out, and we provide fishing gear and rain gear, and we feed them and house them, and then they can just go out and do whatever they want. And we have quite a few return customers, and we've been doing that for since 96. And it's, you know, over time, every year, you know, for a while, there's been a building added here and there. But it's, you know, it's good. It was great for the kids and great for to be out here. And I got better boating skills over time, so I feel good about that.
What do you think it's, or what is the value of raising a kid in a place like this versus, say, in Reno or Berkeley?
Well, we had a guest here last week, and he was from Florida, and he just said, I must say that I'm very impressed with your daughter and her friend and how they are, they're very outdoors, they're very willing to help, they know what, you know, they are comfortable in the outdoors, they're self-reliant, they get in the boat and they drive. And he said it, you know, there's been a lot of negative things about millennials, and I find that you're these girls to be quite refreshing, you know. So that, I think the thing that I would say is that my girls are very self-reliant. They know how to change a tire. They know how to drive a boat. They, in fishing and also in this, is that you have to act quick. You know, you have to think on your feet. You know, things happen and you got to really act, and I think my girls have that skill that they can problem solve on their feet, and they're not afraid of change, you know, they can react. So I think that's one of the best things, the qualities that they've gotten out of this.
And it's something that you've tried to instill in them?
No, I didn't try to instill it. They just had to learn it, or they might not, you know. There's something stuck in your prop in your boat. You have to get it out, or you're not going to make it home. Or you have to figure out what's wrong, why the boat won't start. Well, you have to figure out, well, is the gas line off? You know, is the battery dead? You know, you have to be able to problem solve, because you're in a situation that's kind of, you know, it could turn bad really fast. So those are things that I think that they developed. And it wasn't, I didn't say, you need to, you know, they don't listen when you.
Yeah.
I think my kids learn trial by fire, you know, pretty much is how they learn to survival skills. And Dennis isn't very good at explaining. He's not a good explainer of, like, how to fix something or whatever. He's a very independent person, and he knows how to do it. And usually it's his own way. Well, if you go back and try and, you know, it's like, how come it's like this? Never mind, I didn't have the right part and I just put that or whatever. You know, so they have had to learn. He's not good at showing you how to do something. He just thinks you know already. So they've had to learn that way too. So that's where I think those are great things that they've learned.
And is the family still spending the winters in Truckee?
I am there, and Dennis is there, and all the girls. Annie is in Eugene, Oregon, and she's just started a job as a public defender there. And Rosie is in San Diego, and she was up here for 10 days, and she's going to start nursing school in the fall. And Alice is in Bellingham, Washington.
Mm.
So they're all, but they come home, you know, or I go visit them, and that's fine. They're good. It's all good. We got through the 20s.
Well, you have a really lovely place here.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you could come and be here.
Unless there's anything else you want to add.
No, those are the best stories I have about the Hobbit Hole.
Yeah, and you are still having, but the stories you've told me are really incredible.
Oh, good.
I really enjoy listening to them.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.